2211, officer down, corner of Center and Market. 2211 in route.
And welcome back to Rotten Rewind, a podcast that interrogates critically maligned films of the recent past and asks them if they want revenge. If a movie can't clear the 60% bar, RottenTomatoes.com sets as its freshness guideline, it's up for grabs for us to discuss here on the horniest film podcast on the planet. That's probably actually true.
Sometimes you think we're the horniest?
Jordan's
got in the smut though.
Yeah, but that's not on the main feed. That's true.
That's the secret horn. That's the underground.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and I'm gonna be doing new episodes with the gay Chingy. Also, I'm very excited about it.
I'm Courtney Peronto.
I'm Max Rue, and today we're entering month two of our vulgar Oswarism series, where we're kicking off a 5-week descent into the seedy neon drenched world of neo noir and new American westerns. Yeah, we're gonna be discussing films throughout the month by Brian De Palma, Sam Raimi, Ridley Scott, Walter Hill, and Michael Cimino, as well as a bonus episode featuring David Lynch. But today,
that's hot.
Yeah, today we'll be starting off in the 80s with a pair of rape revenge themed neo-noirs from Clint Eastwood and his longtime paramour, Sandra Locke.
And joining us today on the podcast is comedian, film critic, writer, and our online friend. I guess now she's your real friend because you got to hang out. I hang out with no one. Jordan Sears. Welcome back.
Lovely to be back. A little less lovely to be back in New York after being in LA.
We're talking about Clint Eastwood's fourth entry in the Dirty Harry franchise, the first one that he directed, Sudden Impact, starring Sandra Locke. And then we will be talking about Sandra Locke's sophomore feature, Impulse, from 1990, that I think is a little more obscure to people. I know this was the first time you telling me about it, Jordan, was the first time I had heard of Impulse.
It's really like underseen, which really like upsets me, because in terms of the era that it's in, what it's doing, like this should be a fave for a lot of people. And it's weird that it's not.
Yeah, it definitely felt like something that we easily could have slipped into the erotic thriller series that we did.
It's also like a much harder Google search, because there's like a couple of, there's like some show, like I was like, what the
fuck? Yeah, it's a pretty common.
What are we trying to find?
Common name.
I obviously found it, yeah.
And you hadn't heard of it, right, Courtney?
No.
I knew who Sandra Locke was outside of Sudden Impact, though, because I did have a Clint phase during the beginning of quarantine where I watched a lot of his movies, so I had seen-
Big Clint phase.
I watched a lot of Clint movies. I watched The Gauntlet with them, which is a great time. She's great in it.
She's not any one of the ones that he has any of his million kids with. He has so many kids that I like couldn't
figure out. He had secret children while he was with her with another woman.
Okay.
Good times.
And that is Scott?
It's gotta be Scott.
And the other blonde one?
Well, there's Allison, there's Scott, and then who is with Chris Pratt? Oh no, that's a Schwarzenegger. Sorry.
Yeah, so
I'm mixing them up. I was like, wait, which one of them is? Yeah, Scott is the one that he pretends doesn't exist, but is probably the most famous outside of him.
He is. And they look the most similar. He looks like Clint Eastwood got like Hollywood plastic surgery, which means that he looks like hot but boring. And he's the one that was in the Fast movies that they were like, eh.
Are you the new Paul Walker? Good. And then they were like, nah, never mind.
No, he's not.
He looks so much like his dad in Wrath of Man. There are so many shots where I was like, holy shit, he looks exactly like him.
He's in that like rom-com with Jenny Slate that we kind of liked, right?
Oh yeah, I want you back. You know,
that's like the only time that I've ever thought that he was good.
He's funny. he works in that one. I like him in Wrath of Man. I think that he actually is well used.
I haven't
seen
that.
There's a really amazing scene at the end of Wrath of Man where he has to read a medical report, and it is incredible because it is like this man has never read anything in his life. He cannot pronounce the most basic words. He is baffled by it. But we're talking about his dad. We're talking about Clint, one of the most prolific filmmakers. I mean, a guy who can turn out, you know, 2 movies a year sometimes in his fucking 80s. But before we talk about these movies, we should talk about, you know, he was with a lot of different women, but he had a very long relationship with Sandra Locke that it seems like he kind of pretended wasn't a real relationship.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like, he was with her for a while. Eventually, like, she wanted to direct. He didn't want her to direct. So he basically used his power to make it very hard for her to make movies?
They started having it was around the Gauntlet, I believe. Well, no. They met on the Outlaw Josie Wales. That's when they first started dating, I believe. She was supposed to be the lead in Breezy. That's what she lobbied really hard for. Didn't get it. So yeah, they started this relationship. I believe at the time he was with somebody else. It was kind of an affair, but it seemed like he was very, very into Sandra Locke, but it was never, he didn't really make it public until after that marriage fell apart. She, in the 70s, got pregnant twice with Clint Eastwood, and she got abortions both times.
So we could have had even more kids. He has a lot of children.
He could add more. And I guess she had a quote that said, "I'd feel sorry for any child that had me for a mother."
Whoa.
Yeah.
In the right mood, I would say that.
I kind of get the feeling that she had low self-esteem or something was going on. And I'm sure that helping, and I'm sure that being with him did not help. And Sandra, I also just want to, it's just like such a great actress. Like, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. She's incredible in that. Also, that movie, that Keanu Reeves movie, Knock Knock, is a remake of a movie that she was in.
That's right, because she produced it.
Called Death Game. Where it's her and Colleen Camp.
I've never seen that.
The sky. I mean, if you watch the trailer, because, you know, 70s trailers were insane, it will almost show you the entire movie. So even though I can't find it, I can't find the movie, I think I could probably have to spend a lot of money on a VHS or something. If you watch the trailer, it shows you so much of it. And it's still just even the trailer is a better movie than Knock Knock.
Yeah, I'm a Knock Knock stan. You don't get too many Keanu Reeves fucks movies. So
it's true. He doesn't fuck that much
in movies.
Yeah, I was wondering, because when I looked her up, I was like, oh, why did she produce Knock Knock? She came out of retirement to produce it. I was like, what's going on here? So that all checks out.
Yeah, and Colleen Camp is in Knock Knock, so they were both involved.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, she, for The Heart is a Lonely Hunter, for her big breakthrough role, she was nominated for an Oscar. She was on the rise, and then just kind of didn't really land anything too solid for a long time. She ended up doing a lot of TV after that, and then ended up doing The Outlaw Josie Wales. Yeah. And then she goes on to star in a bunch of movies with Clint Eastwood.
Bronco Billy.
Yeah. Bronco Billy.
The Gauntlet. She also starred in Willard, the first Willard, not the Crispin Glover.
Yeah, not the Crispin Glover Willard.
Yeah, so she finally does get to make a movie in 1986 called Rat Boy, which I have tried very hard to finish Rat Boy. I usually get halfway and I just don't understand. Rat Boy seems like a movie made by a person who is just really not doing well, and it's very confusing to watch, because it's just literally about a rat boy, and she's in it, Sandra Locke is in it, and she is trying to make him a star. It's just one of those things that it's got such a weird cast too. Robert Townsend is in it in a main role. Louis Anderson is in it. It's wild. It's clearly trying to be a quirky 80s comedy, but it was too quirky. So now no one ever talks about it.
The images I've seen from it are very upsetting.
Okay.
The Rat Boy, not doing well, but Impulse, which she makes 4 years later. So good.
Feels like she's kind of switching into, she's almost dabbling in the territory that she's been acting in with Clint Eastwood. When she directs Impulse. Yeah.
At the point that she is directing, are her and Clint no longer together?
They are in the process of not being together. Yeah. So I read something in Vanity Fair that was basically pointing out that it was kind of an early predecessor for what's going on with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, where it was this very public trial where Sandra Locke was far less known. Clint Eastwood was very powerful and dominated the conversation. It's tough. Clint Eastwood is a guy that I've really, as you know, and I've talked about on the podcast, as a filmmaker and an actor, I've really grown to really like. That doesn't mean that he's a great person by any means, obviously.
No.
It's rough because I'm a film critic, so I know a lot of people that ride for that man. Just you got to watch The Mule, all that shit. And it's not that I'm not going to give him a chance, but it's one of those things where I'm trying to be mature, in which Yeah, it really pisses me off, especially because something like Impulse reminds me a lot of one of Kathryn Bigelow's early films, Blue Steel, mm-hmm. and just seeing mm-hmm. where she was able to go with that and where Sandra could not go, it pisses me off. It really does.
I mean, it seems like she, with Impulse, it really got dumped. From what I could tell, like,
which is crazy because it's like Teresa Russell's perform. I mean, I feel like Teresa Russell is maybe one of our most underrated actresses, just for the fact that like she's amazing in what she's in, but what she's in never gets any respect.
She's great. Yeah. She's so good in Straight Time and Bad Timing. Bad Timing is one I think we almost did for this month. The Nicholas Roeg movie, she's really good in. But yeah, I mean, this movie got like kind of a weirdly limited release. Like, kind of, it was one of those like not super, super limited, but not wide releases. It kind of gets dumped in April and it bombs against Ernest Goes to Jail and Crybaby.
Oh my gosh, I remember Ernest Goes to Jail.
How could you not? How could you not remember?
My dad really likes those movies.
That checks out.
I know.
I was a big Crybaby fan, but I don't know. I still think it should have been, it should have come out like in the fall.
What, Impulse?
Yeah.
It didn't seem like they really cared much for it. And I wonder if a lot of that had to do with Clint maybe like, I don't know, sinking the movie in some way behind the scenes.
Yeah, That's what I would think.
So he did?
I need to do some more reading on it because I really want to know like if he had something to do with it, because it's crazy. It's like, it's Teresa Russell. It's Jeff Fahey.
If Jeff Fahey's in your movie, you're opening big.
That man's face. Like, I could not stop looking at his face.
Jeff Fahey has an insane face. Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but we should start with one of their last collaborations, which is the fourth entry in the Dirty Harry franchise.
Dirty Harry is at it again in Sudden Impact.
What you doing, you pighead sucker?
You boys put those guns down.
Say what?
We're not just gonna let you walk out of here.
Who's we, sucker?
Smith, and Wesson, and me. Go ahead. Make my day.
Clint Eastwood, Dirty Harry, Sudden Impact.
Yeah, so it's the fourth entry in the Dirty Harry series. This time, America's favorite filthy cop takes his disregard for due process out on brown people he perceives to be gang members before turning his attention to a string of killings that could have all been traced back to the rape and torture of two young women, except it seems like at the time of the crime, the cops could care less. Not surprising. So weirdly, Harry Callahan is now confronted with the idea of empathizing with a woman for the first time in his life as he realizes that the hot blonde he wants to bang just might be the killer behind the revenge murders he's been cleaning up in between almost getting fired every day of his work week. Literally every other scene with him and his superior is like, God damn it, Harry, you son of a bitch, you did it again.
He's such a bad person. Kind of like how we were talking about, I mean, to a way greater degree, like Die Hard with a Vengeance last week, about how like it just knows to make Bruce Willis's character kind of a shithead. He is really unlikable here.
You know, Harry Callahan is not a good person.
No.
So you haven't seen the first one, Jordan? You haven't seen the original Dirty Harry?
Mm-mm. No, and I didn't even know that it was a Dirty Harry movie. Like, literally, I rented it. I turned it on. I did not know that it was a Dirty Harry movie until he says the make my day line.
Oh, wait a second.
That's a famous line. Oh, shit, is this? Right. Like, I That's didn't right. even read anything about it. I just turned it on.
Well, it's one of those ones that like can easily stand on its own, which is kind of also a thing with like the Die Hard movies where they would just take scripts that were like written for something else and were like, what if we just made it a Die Hard movie? So I guess you could do that with Dirty Harry too, where they're like, we'll just make the cop Dirty Harry. I don't know. Just have him say some racist shit and we'll be good. This is probably his least racist outing. The first one is insane. The first one is like, it's funny that the first one knows that the only way to make Harry Callahan empathetic or you to want to root for him is to pit him against the absolute most fucking vile villain alive, which is just this like screeching, horrible child of a man in the first one. And it works mostly. It's also directed by Don Siegel. So like, it's pretty fucking well directed.
Feels like they found each other. Like they're right for one another, even though they're both horrible. You're like, well, this is like the best outcome.
Yeah.
Like you have someone really bad to chase and you get chased. Good.
Yeah. Alex and I know I'm bad, but this guy's a real piece of shit.
So. Yeah. It's a little
It's kind of, you know, what Jody Hill learned with Danny McBride, which was like the only way that we can make this Danny McBride character rootable is if we pit him against the absolute, like someone way fucking worse, which is oftentimes what you have to do with characters like that. But yeah, this one is interesting because I don't want to say it's Harry Callahan growing up, but he's faced with something that I don't think they would have even attempted to cover in the first three.
No.
I guess this was a movie that Sandra Locke originally wanted, was developed for just her, and it became a Dirty Harry movie.
I want to fight him. Because you know what I was thinking the entire time? I was just like, why is he in this?
Right.
Does it make sense why he's here?
I think that woman. It's more legible if you're in any way invested in the Dirty Harry story because it was peculiar to watch him.
Well, it's almost like a mirror of the real Clint Eastwood, where it's this guy whose like politics are often chalked up to like something very simple, which is just like, oh, this guy's a Republican nutjob, which is like, well, no, he's a libertarian. And obviously that's not any better. Libertarians suck. But the interesting thing about Clint Eastwood and his politics is that, yeah, he is very conservative, but he also hates authority figures. So this is a man who like has no respect for cops, but makes movies about them, which is really fascinating. and he seems to be operating outside because you can tell like all these movies are critical of police, but it's still it's just taking on the Charles Bronson like vigilante, except that he still has a badge. He's a vigilante with a badge. He's just like, fuck that, fuck the courts. You know, the beginning when that guy gets off and he's like, fuck the courts, I'll just kill him myself. I'm a sucker for watching Clint Eastwood choke out some guy in some little shit in an elevator saying like, you're nothing but dog shit. You know what happens to dog shit? It gets stepped on. Yeah, like, look, that's fun. I'm not gonna lie. That's a good time.
It's wild to me that this nigga walks into a wedding. Into a wedding, walks right up to the father of the bride, and then just like puts his whole shit out there. And they all just sit there, especially his wife just sitting there, just like, I don't know if that's his wife or his mother, but the older woman, you know what I mean? Who's just sitting there. And I'm just like, this is crazy.
And then the man just has a heart attack. This is the highest grossing Dirty Harry movie.
Really?
I'm assuming that with the Sandra Locke thing, with like this movie being developed with her, maybe it was that the script was just like not, it was just kind of like stuck in development. And I don't know if it was a thing of like, hey, what if we made this Dirty Harry movie and that's how it gets made? It does feel like a special case of like, hey, what happens if Dirty Harry tackles rape culture?
Yeah.
And so it's like an interesting combination of two very different forces.
Yeah, because the Sandra Locke plotline is very similar to like Promising Young Woman or something, where it's like, oh, she's just like hunting down people.
God, if only that's what Promising Young Woman was.
Yeah.
Just shooting men on the beach.
If only the woodpecker size. Like that would have been good.
That would have not been an Oscar nominated.
Every single the thing is that every single time Sandra Locke kills someone in this movie, I'm just like, yeah, I'm fine with this. I don't know what.
Oh yeah.
Like, it just seems like this is a very just situation, and I would just walk away from it.
The guy that she goes to his house and he's like by the sink and he's like kind of like won't even look at her. That scene is really good.
Or
he's like, it wasn't that bad, was it? Not enough to shoot me, right? And then he's just like kind of whispering. I feel like she shoots a couple guys just by starting, she shoots them in the dick first.
Yeah.
And then a chest
that's
shot.
That's her signature. It's like the dick and then the head.
She kind of moves up. She's like, you get a dick shot, a chest shot, and a head shot. You have to die knowing that your dick is
mad. Yeah.
But yeah, Dirty Harry gets kind of suspended or.
Kind of.
When he's like kind of just put on vacation. They're like, just well, taking like,
refuses to be suspended.
Yeah, like, he's kind of like, nah. It's like when you try to break up with someone and they're like, we're going to talk in a week.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where it's like, yeah, Costanza's trying to break up with this woman and she's just like, no, I think that we still have more things to do in our relationship. I reject this.
is an insane thing to say to somebody trying to break up with you. I disagree.
Yeah, I disagree.
Yeah, he's basically doing that every time his superior is like, God damn it, Harry, you killed 13 people in the street. They didn't even do anything. Harry, what are you thinking? And he's like, that's street justice.
Yeah, he is like that.
He's basically like, I can't believe I work for you pigs, but fuck it. I'm the only one who gets shit done around
me. It's the only way that he can,
Yeah, the only way that he can kill people is to be a cop. At least he's like open about it. He's like, listen, I know I'm a fascist piece of shit, but I'll tell you to your face I am. These other guys, they're just fucking pigs, but... Yeah, I mean, this guy is literally like, I'll fucking take care of this shit. It's interesting because he is basically like, he is aware that the courts don't actually serve any type of justice for the most part. But
yeah,
so he's like, well, then fuck it. I'll just go kill him, which is crazy to base an entire franchise on a cop who's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
He really is. He's just killing people. Like, it's crazy. It's people arguing with him, him being like, no, I'm correct.
Yeah.
And like, also like, I realize that almost every cop parody thing comes from this.
Yeah.
From this. I mean, not just from this. I feel like not just from this franchise, but from this movie specifically, because like constantly, I feel like multiple times somebody's like, you're a dinosaur, Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like, things have changed.
Well, he does have that one black friend, black friend in the woods, the one scene. Because it was crazy because I was like, man, he just hates black people. And then they just give him this one black friend.
Yeah.
That's his boy.
It's just like, no, he just hates those black people. This black person is fine. It's like, oh, okay, I get it.
This guy respects me.
Fine now.
And that guy, like, doesn't he like die like 3 years?
Yeah. He shows like, up okay, to help him, good. And then he gets stabbed in the neck, and then he's like, and then Harry finds him. And he's like, God damn it, my only black friend is dead. This good is friend, not good.
Harry.
I keep trying to be progressive and catch on, but things keep coming up.
He keeps making black friends. You know what's funny? Have you ever seen Play Misty for Me?
Oh, yeah.
No, I never have.
You haven't seen Play Misty for Me?
No, I know.
He's hanging out. He's like, he has like straight up black friends in that. Every single time he talks to a black person Play Misty for Me, it was like, I was like a shock. I was like, whoa, there's a movie where he's just hanging out with black people.
Have you seen his Charlie Bird movie with Forest Whitaker? It's fucking incredible. It's my favorite movie of his. It's so fucking good.
What's it called?
I mean, he loves jazz. Bird. It's with Forest Whitaker. Forest Whitaker is so good in it. Definitely watch Bird. It is an incredible movie. It's almost an experimental like biopic. It's so weird. It doesn't even feel like him. Huh. Like he's really doing something different with it. And you can tell like that he does really, really like respect this man in jazz. Have you seen Gran Torino?
Yes, I, of course. I felt like that was required reading for me. I mean, the first time I watched Gran Torino, I think it was like playing at the gym. And I just, so it was like kind of out of context.
Weird, yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck is this?
I heard,
it's worse than a... It's weird. It's really confusing. The end of that movie is very strange.
I've never seen that one.
Oh, there are racial slurs in Gran Torino that I had never heard in my life. I was like, this motherfucker dug deep to fucking pull out some old school racist shit that I was like, I have never heard.
Yeah, he should write a BuzzFeed listicle.
25 worst things you could call a fucking Asian person. Oh my God. That's his Stop Asian Hate.
That's it. Oh, man.
Oh, my. That movie, it's basically him, like, befriending.
I guess it's kind of like this one, because I think that it's, like, him being like, no, look, I like them now.
Well, I think it's,
women?
Like, well,
I never thought about it before, but rape is bad.
I don't really like women, but you definitely shouldn't rape them, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, and Gran Torino feels like, I mean, Gran Torino is a movie about, like, tolerance. Like, he has learned to tolerate.
Well, it's interesting because on that end, it's like other. It's like a guy who's like aware of how racist he is, coming to terms with his racism. He's such a fascinating filmmaker, like especially some of his last movies. Like The Mule is genuinely like a very good movie that is one of the best modern critiques of capitalism. But I don't know if he knows that. But he is playing an old man who has no retirement. He loses his job. He's losing his property. He has no money. And so he starts running drugs for the cartel, which is a true story. It's just such a fantastic like indictment of our system. But I don't fully know. It's always hard to tell, like, how much does he know this? So there's
I mean,
a lot
Dirty
of-
the Dirty Harry movies are anti-cop movies, but they don't know them.
The whole thing is that he's like, cops are shitty, but if I was one of them, I would get shit done. The Sunderlaw character is by far like the most interesting part of this. Like the movie easily could have just been about her. And yet it would have been like a far more violent, noir, promising right. young woman. I don't know. Like, what do you two think of like the depiction here of rape and the trauma that comes from it?
I mean, we should say that like her sister is also in this movie. And I think.
Yeah, it was both of them. It happened to both of them. And yeah. I don't. But what? Why is the sister in the hospital? I did miss that.
It does feel like the incident happened to her when she was even younger. Like
she
very
was,
young.
She was a teenager and the yeah. Sunderlaw character was like 21. And the younger sister has been like in and out of hospitals, mental hospitals, because she just hasn't been able to cope.
Yeah.
And so she's completely like come undone at this point. And that's why Sunderlaw at this point is like, it makes far more sense in the like setup of Promising Young Woman, where like, you're like, you've devoted your entire life to like just fucking with random shitty guys at bars because your friend was raped. And it's like kind of a loose thing where you're like, okay, but like even the Molly Shannon character in that's like, you need to like live
you
your
should
life.
Probably
yeah,
just
it's
chill.
Like
you should
yeah.
probably have a life.
When the mom of the victim is like, hey, can you chill?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is like makes more and more sense because not only was she raped, but she watched her sister get raped. So she's avenging, it seems like mostly her sister. And yeah, all these killings are completely justified. And then you get to the main villain who looks like a combination of Will Forte and Bobby Peru from Wild at Heart.
You're right. That looks so much like Will Forte to me. I was like, what the fuck?
I couldn't stop
terrifying.
Laughing every time you came on screen because I was like, if Will Forte played this part, it would be insane.
I couldn't mm-hmm. believe that he was like his entire energy was just like, and I just kept on imagining this version of the movie that didn't have Clint Eastwood in it. So then we'd get like all of these like cuts to like whatever the fuck that guy is doing. Like, it was just because, you know, it would be like a lead up, you know, because she's just like getting the Stooges and everybody, which yeah. like I would say that like aside from that guy who is terrifying, the second most terrifying is that woman that was
oh,
involved.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah,
that
no,
woman
she's
is
so
nuts.
Bizarre. That woman's fucking crazy because she's like, she calls her sister a slut. Yeah, it's so fucking weird. That woman is the weirdest character in this entire movie to me.
Yeah, when Sunderlaw yeah. comes for her, this woman says, so the bitch is here. And then when she has a gun
like,
to her head, she just-
What did this girl do to you?
Yeah.
The craziest one. Yeah, she's like, how's your slut sister? And then just gets blown away.
And it's weird when you realize, like, further through the movie that, like, the entire town knows that this happened, remembers this happened. And
yeah.
It's just like, okay, why are you all holding this in? Like, some it's not like they were, like, I really don't understand it. Like, it would be one thing if they were, like, famous women and it was, like, a big thing where they, like, had to hide. Like, if they were, like, George Bush's kids or something.
Right.
But it's not. These are just some chicks. It's weird that everyone knows.
Well, I kind of like that, though, because it is this, like, sleepy beach town that are living in this awareness of what these men who live in their town have done, you know, like the one father of that kid who grows up to try to kill himself and is then just like a vegetable, who's like the police chief, living with this awareness. And is basically like, I know this is horrible, but like these guys will kill me if I do anything about it. So I guess if the main villain wasn't so cartoonish, it would make more sense. But yeah, like yeah. if your main guy is like Will Forte, just like this screeching, like, oh my God.
Like, oh my God. That scene with him and the woman in the bedroom.
Oh yeah.
What was that? I've never seen anything.
I don't know. My brother
that.
Came over when that scene was on and he was like, are you watching some weird porn or something? Like, what are you looking at? I was like, no, I would not. If this man was in a porn, I would not watch it.
No,
he's a deal breaker.
He is a deal
breaker.
Like,
all a dude in a porn has to do is be almost invisible. And this guy is not invisible.
No, hi. You know, but hey, he's like pure evil. What about this amazing quote? There is a early scene where they go to a crime scene and Clint Eastwood gets really upset with the other cop on the scene who's eating a hot dog. And he says,
that
nobody,
guy,
and I mean nobody, puts ketchup on a hot dog.
Oh, yeah.
He's
so
mad
pissed.
About that.
He's pissed. He's like, listen, I can excuse a lot of this other bullshit. You just put ketchup on a hot dog. He's like, what are you, a little boy? And I was like, I still put ketchup on a hot dog.
I mean,
mad at me.
Like, if you have to choose between just ketchup and mustard, you choose mustard. But I put it all on.
You got
to
put it all on.
Yeah. Well, you're a hot dog guy. I think in my phone, one of your little emojis that
is a hot dog.
Well, that's
because in the beginning of the pandemic,
when I was
knee deep in Clint Eastwood's filmography and eating hot dogs every day. That was why I want to die.
Yeah, you eat so many hot dogs. You would just like send me a picture of like two hot dogs being cooked, or send me a text of like, I had one hot dog. I should have made two hot dogs.
Well, should have had two. Looks like I'm going to wake up and watch Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil and eat four hot dogs today. That's going to be my day. Don't have a job. Hope I don't get COVID. That was my life.
Respect.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Oh, also, we should talk about the very randomly like cute subplot thrown in of Dirty Harry gets a dog.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that like someone was like, hey, he's too unlikable.
And every single time the dog does something, he's like, swell.
Yeah.
I loved that. I loved every time he said swell.
Yeah. Like the dog will just be like shitting on something and someone's like, is that your dog? And he's like, yeah, you want him? Fucking dog keeps shitting on everything. But when he comes home and he finds out that they kill his only black friend and then they like someone fucked with his dog. His dog's like limping.
Yeah.
That was a weird one where I was like, did they like fuck his dog? What did they do to his dog?
I don't think they fucked him.
Well, I don't think they fucked him really, but the dog's limping out.
I was like, is that the first thing you thought of?
Well, given who the villain is, maybe.
That's true.
If he that guy
did fuck his dog.
Like, we killed your friend and we fucked your dog. What are you going to do about it? I feel like he would just shoot him on the spot if that's what he said.
Yeah.
Dirty Harry found out that someone killed his best friend and fucked his dog. I think that person would die this guy does die a horrible death.
Yeah, he does.
It's a pretty incredible death. He gets shot and then falls off like a roller coaster and then lands on he's impaled by a unicorn on a carousel, which is tight. That's got to be one of my favorite death scenes. A carousel that's already just spinning. So he hits the unicorn, is impaled, and then it's just spinning around.
We didn't talk about her paintings, which are
awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, we should also know.
I wanted her fucking paintings, man.
That she should also just like maybe give up murdering, not because it's like dangerous, because like she's actually pretty gifted. So
yeah.
He comes over and he sees her art and he looks so confused. He looks at her art and he's just like, this shit's weird, lady.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, listen, I still want to fuck, but what's going on over here? No, she's a good artist, man.
It's all that raw pain. You got to channel it into your art.
That is heavily suggested. Is it like the reason that she's good? It's like, well, she could have not had pain and could have been making some like dope risographs for
the modern version. You got to sell this on Instagram.
Yeah, the modern version is she has like a sick IG store, but
we're going to have to get you an Etsy account. This is good. Yeah. And then he, at the end, he lets her get away with it.
Yeah. And she starts getting upset. Like he's just going to arrest her too. The nicest thing he does is he's still like stoic as fuck.
Yeah.
But listen,
He grows a little bit, just a little bit.
I don't think he does. I think that he realizes that there's a Venn diagram where he overlaps with her and he believes more that he likes killing people and doesn't like the system, to where he's like, well, she does too. And it's fit. Like, I don't think he's learned anything. I just think that like he gives her like a citation.
Yeah.
It feels like that. And I like that about it, because I don't think Dirty Harry is a character that grows. Because if Dirty Harry grows, then he also has to like maybe think about his past. And I think that that can't work. That's where we are now in our movies. It's like, oh, someone's like haunted by their own actions or their past. But Dirty Harry is haunted only by the shit that's in front of him every moment.
Honestly, Clint should just bring back, he should do one last Dirty Harry movie before he dies.
I was going to say, it'd be really funny.
Just really old.
It's just like, it's about like a podcaster who's opening up all this cops cases. I mean, like, he's a murderer.
This is about Dirty Harry getting canceled.
Just him like smashing iPhone. I would love that.
I don't care about this TikTok ding dong bullshit. That would be
tight. That'd be great.
If I was at Warner Brothers, I'd be like, yeah, we got to finance this before he dies. Okay, we got to get this one going.
Hey, Callahan. Don't look so puked out. Better luck next time, fool.
Listen, punk. To me, you're nothing but dog shit. You understand? And a lot of things can happen to dog shit. It can be scraped up with a shovel off the ground. It can dry up and blow away in the wind, or it can be stepped on and squashed. So take my advice. Be careful where the dog shits you.
This has a 57%. It has an audience score of 54%, but it is the highest grossing Dirty Harry movie. Yeah. So, wow. I feel like we rarely get a Pauline Kael quote here, but we got a Pauline Kael of the New Yorker at the time said, "The whole thing is so obvious that people in the audience applaud and hoot. It might be mistaken for parody if the sledgehammer's slow pacing didn't tell you that Eastwood wasn't in on the joke." Gary Arnold of the Washington Post said it's difficult to view Sudden Impact as anything more exciting or authentic than the action movie equivalent of drawn out foreplay and a fake orgasm.
That's a weird way to describe this movie.
I probably wouldn't talk about foreplay and orgasm.
This isn't a sexy movie.
It's a weird Gary.
It's just like, well, assault, that's sexy. I mean, I truly do believe that like a lot of like older critics watch movies like that and were just like, well, this isn't doing it for me. Fucking weirdos.
this isn't hot. We got two lesser known critics, but really going after Sandra Locke, which is a shame. Michael A. Smith of a site called Nolan's Pop Culture Review wrote a review that said, "Sadly, Clint was still sleeping with Sandra Locke and giving her work. The worst of the Dirty Harry films didn't make my day."
This is an Oscar-nominated actress. Like, this is crazy. I don't know what people's problem was, but like,
and she's great.
Like, I don't know. No, it's just like, just say that you hate women. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah, I rather just be honest.
Yeah, and then Brian McCabe, filmcritic.com, said the worst of the Dirty Harry films made even more excruciating by Sandra Locke's presence.
I truly don't understand what's going on.
These are newer critics too. These are not older critics.
Okay, wait.
The last few years.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, I need to know, like, after the show, I'm going to find them. I'm going to ask them to turn their location on. We're going to have a conversation. I just can't get laid. I don't get it. Jesus.
But Roger Ebert gave this movie 3 stars. Roger Ebert said, "Most of what you hear about pop art and pop culture is purely hype. But there comes a moment about halfway through Sudden Impact, the new Dirty Harry movie, when you realize that Harry has achieved some kind of legitimate pop status as the purest distillation in the movies of the spirit of vengeance. To all those cowboy movies we saw in our youth, all those TV westerns and cop dramas and war movies, Dirty Harry has brought a great simplification. A big man, big gun, a bad guy, and instant justice. Sudden Impact is a Dirty Harry movie with only the good parts left in. All the slow stuff such as character, motivation, atmosphere, and plot have been paired to exactly the minimum necessary to hold together the violence."
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Raj. And then a write-up that I really liked that talked about Sandra Locke was from Kristen Yoon-Soo Kim. She said, "I've always been mystified by Sandra Locke's eyes. In extreme close-ups, they're gray with a hint of blue or green, but in any other shot, they look like the darkest eyes I've ever seen. She looks like a deer, but not one caught in headlights. Her eyes are inky pools that stare back, ones that if you got lost in, you'd never find your way back from. They're especially haunting here because they're the cold, apathetic eyes of a killer. But of course, she's not a psychopath on a random killing spree. She's doing it to avenge her own loss of identity, a certain innocence, but more importantly, the sanity of her sister, who was also brutalized the same night 10 years ago. Locke plays a painter, and in her self-portrait, she's rendered her dark eyes even more terrifying, like black holes that could smite you with a glance. It is a version of herself she aspires to be, yet she hates watching herself become that way, hence the breaking of mirrors as her kills escalate. When she's face to face with her assaulters, her eyes indicate she has nothing to lose, and that's a terrifying thing to realize. In the climactic set piece on the merry-go-round, Locke looks like the horses she's painted, their eyes also black, unreadable. But by the very end, her eyes finally give way as they water. Closure, I hope."
I wish she still wrote Crit.
Does she not write anymore?
She hasn't been lately. Like, I don't know if it's permanent, but she hasn't been lately. And she's the only one you quoted. Well, I mean, it's Roger Ebert kind of got it, but she fucking gets it. That's exactly it.
Yeah, she's a really great writer. Yeah, she just posted that on Letterboxd, but I thought that was a really beautiful write-up of Sandra Locke. Who's everyone's MVP for Sudden Impact? Sandra Locke.
Yeah, it's Sandra Locke.
Yeah, it's her.
I think this is a good movie. I like Sudden Impact.
I think it's good. I don't think it has the appeal to be like a cult classic.
No. Let's move on to Impulse.
Could try to set him up with drug buy. I got just the girl for him.
Well, I want to meet her first before I okay anybody.
There's a thin line between the woman she is.
If you're trying to make a normal person out of me, the department loses its best female undercover cop.
And the woman she plays.
What do you feel like doing right now?
I feel like getting on a plane and going someplace. I enjoy the ride a lot more if I was traveling first class.
Between the cop she is,
I can never rely on anybody but myself.
And the suspect she becomes.
I thought you were going to murder.
Did you find the money?
What money?
$1 million.
The killer dies. We'll never really know what happened, will we?
When fantasy becomes reality.
You know what you did, Bonnie?
It's easy to lose control.
Moving on to a film directed by Clint's co-star from Sudden Impact, Sandra Locke. Locke's 1990 film Impulse revisits some of Sudden Impact's controversial themes, but this time casts the detective as a woman, Lottie, played by Teresa Russell, who works the Vice beat as an undercover prostitute. While on the job, Teresa kills a handful of drug dealers. She gets to blow off some steam at a bar where she meets up with a known gangster, Tony. Tony and Lottie go back to his place, and while Lottie is freshening up in the bathroom, Tony is gunned down by an unknown killer, and the detective assigned to the case of the killing just happens to be Lottie's new hookup buddy, Stan, who isn't aware of her involvement in the crime scene itself. And then they have this. It's a hard movie to write a synopsis for because I feel like kind of like In the Cut or something, like so much of like what's the tension of the movie is just like weird undercurrent shit. Because so basically she's trying to hide that she was there. And then you're trying to figure out who the bad guy is.
And you get Jeff Fahey as the cop, as Sam. And fucking really weird casting of George. How do you say George? Is it Dezundas?
He's wild in this movie, man. Like, I was like, wait, I've seen him before, but I've never seen him.
Not like this.
I've never seen him like this. But no, yeah, that is a hard name to pronounce.
Johnson. George Johnson.
Johnson.
All right, what? It's German. George Johnson is, just playing the really scummy detective who is just constantly groping Teresa Russell while she's undercover. Just a real big piece of shit. Yeah, this movie is 25% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it has an audience score of 21%.
It's a really low, because like, I was surprised how low it was. It's more than half the score of Sudden Impact.
It also has far less reviews. I know that. But like, I mean, like we said earlier, like this is definitely a more obscure title, I think, for a lot of people. This is like a movie I probably would have seen at the video store that I just probably had like a generic cover that looked like any other like kind of 90s borderline like erotic thriller. Yeah, I think because it's directed by Sandra Locke and because of Teresa Russell's performance, there's so many more layers beneath it that, yeah, it's like the plot kind of does take a backseat too. And I think you brought up In the Cut. Obviously, that was the first movie we all talked about together on this podcast. Yeah. But like, it definitely feels
really similar to me. Except I don't want to fuck Stan. And I do admittedly, Ruffalo wins me over.
That's
I want to fuck him.
Well, Stan's not eating ass. That's his problem. Stan's got to step it up in the ass eating department. Stan's got to eat some ass if he wants to be taken seriously.
Stan is so kind of like a good interpretation of like what a nice guy is, where it's just like he seems fine, but like he just like flies off the handle in ways that's just are just like not really conducive to a healthy partnership between those two.
Jeff Fahey to me looks like your mom's new boyfriend that is definitely scummy, but he hasn't quite revealed it yet. He just has an inherently skeezy vibe. It's interesting that he's cast as like the nice cop here, or like the quote unquote like good cop.
But I think it is kind of like the Mark Ruffalo thing in The Cut, where you have to be sort of tense whether he's evil.
Yes.
And so I think maybe he keeps you too tense, and like the relief when he's not isn't as sublime. But
sure. No, that's a good point. I mean, the thing about Ruffalo though is it's like the opposite thing, where Ruffalo is inherently likable. He's pretty easy to get behind, even when he's playing on the surface scummy guy.
Yeah.
Jeff Fahey, I guess the first thing I saw Jeff Fahey in was The Lawnmower Man. So that's kind of always how I knew Jeff Fahey growing up, was The Lawnmower Man. He's not like bad here.
No, he's not bad.
No, he's in, interestingly, I think the same year he's in another really actually underrated Clint Eastwood movie called White Hunter Black Heart, where he's kind of the co-lead to Clint Eastwood.
Also similar to Endicott. I just appreciate how an impulse, like every single man sucks. And not just that, but it's like Teresa Russell is also just like, yeah, I know. Like her whole mood is, yeah.
She's tired. She seems she's really tired.
It's weird. She's like so beautiful. She's so beautiful, but she's so tired. Like the scene where she's just like brushing her hair and she's just like irritated.
She looks so different between like when she's a cop and then like tarted up for her vice. Like she looks alarmingly different.
She's in character. Yeah. She's doing a good job. She's
They do a good job of like not going over. Yeah, no, I liked it.
So Impulse is, one of her first leading roles. She follows this movie up the next year with a movie simply called Whore.
Oh yeah,
have you seen
it? Oh yeah, I've been wanting to see Whore. Like that's one of those that I look for every once in a while.
It's Ken Russell. Okay.
Yeah.
Whore is Whore rotten? Whore's rotten.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah. Oh, like, that's something like baby.
Teresa Russell is also like one of those figures that I've just been fascinated by for years, just because of like how good she is, but because of the projects that she chooses, which are largely like erotic and fucked up. Like nobody really thinks of her.
Yeah.
Like not as just like a regular actress in the same way that they think of other actresses from that time.
Yeah, I guess because she was another actress that just kind of faded, unfortunately, like way too early. Like by the time you get to Wild Things, she's playing the main, one of the main characters' moms. She doesn't really do much. She's on a couple.
She was on like a CSI episode or two. It feels like.
Dude, she was on a Kevin Williamson show that I totally remember watching called Glory Days.
I don't remember this show.
It's like an early 2000s WB show. She's in Spider-Man 3. Don't remember that. Her last credit was in 2014 in a movie called Moving Mountains.
I want to bring her back. Let's bring her back. That's what I want. I want her to come back.
She's great. I mean, what first introduced you to this movie, Jordan?
I was reading about Sandra Luck. I don't know. Sometimes I go on to these like research holes where I'm just like looking for movies made by female directors. And I was reading about Sandra Luck and I had seen something on Twitter, like a screenshot of something about Clint Eastwood trying to fuck with her career. And so then I just decided, okay, well, I'm going to watch one of her movies and see what talent we missed. And then when I watched Impulse, and like, I fucking loved it. And I just couldn't figure out. I mean, part of it's also just that, like, you can't find a lot of, like, stills of it. Like, it was similar within the cut. Like, it's only now recently that you can get, like, good, like, screenshots from In the Cut, even though it's a gorgeous movie. They just weren't available because it wasn't a popular movie.
Because the only Blu-ray version of that movie is, like, a combo pack with that Kevin Bacon movie, Trapped.
Yes. It's got Trapped, Flatliners. It's got, like, The Big Picture.
Does it have Wild Things?
No, but it does have Hollow Man.
Oh, fuck yeah. Kevin Bacon could have been that cop in this.
He would, because like you are kind of drawn to him, but you also think, maybe not. The scene that I like is when they reveal, they're like on a date and they reveal to each other that they both looked at each other's files. I think that's hot.
So looking at each other's social media.
Yeah, because it's like, I creep hard and
I creeped on your file.
But I pretend like I haven't.
That's what you got to tell someone when you're hooking up with them. I know your social security number. The scene with them fucking is actually pretty well done and actually sexy. There's no ass eating, but it's still sexy.
It's still sexy.
Yeah. I also just love that this is like shot in LA near where I live and also where I grew up. She lives in the San Fernando Valley, the Laurelwood Apartments. I know where that is. So it was just cool to see her driving down Ventura. I don't know. I enjoyed that. The bus scene where she's undercover and the guy's trying to get her to shoot up to prove she's not a cop. One of my favorite details in that scene is when the cops do come in and raid the place. And there's one guy on the couch who is still shooting up, who is just like sees the cops coming in and like clocks it, but is like, yeah, I'm going to continue to get high. I love that. And they're like, get the fucking needle out of your arm. And he just won't do it. He's just like, I'm good.
And then the mustachioed guy, when he gets Teresa Russell, he just feels her up. And it's just like, well, I didn't want to blow her.
Oh, yeah.
He plays his character's name is Morgan.
He's just Joe Morgan or something.
That's like a perfect name for him. But it's so wild. Like the Jeff Fahey's constantly just like, you shouldn't put up with that. You shouldn't put up with that. Well, literally yelling at her. Why are you putting up with that?
It's like, why are you letting him fucking grope you, you stupid bitch? Don't do this.
Their fights are crazy. So weird.
He's so like dad-like to her.
Yeah. And,
like, yeah.
He's just kind of a cuck in it. He's just kind of like, why are you doing this? And like, mm-hmm. you deserve better, but.
It's like, yeah, it's like, okay, if you want to like treat her better, then just treat her better. But don't do this weird thing where you're like scolding her for what she's doing when y'all are not together. If you have a thing.
I do feel like that's a dude thing though.
Oh yeah, no, oh, it yeah. totally is.
Like that's yeah. a real ass thing that yeah. dudes are out here doing. Dudes are always like, you should like, you like don't like have like a good, like, well, they don't say it this smartly, like inner voice, like don't be so hard on yourself. And it's like, it's because of you. It's like, it's because of people like you, like fuck you. I hate that.
Yeah. So. Sometimes guys will just be like, you know, I just want you to be good. I just want you to be okay. Yeah, like yeah, without really yeah. like with this weird throwing up your hands, like there's like, you can't yeah, like, do anything.
I just don't want to hear about it.
But this movie, I wasn't like blown away by the way with like in the cut where I was like, how has nobody, you know, why did this movie
it's
bomb?
It's shakier than in the cut.
It's a little more yeah. of like a standard 90s popular thriller, but mm-hmm. it does have a far more interesting perspective in the way the Teresa Russell character is treated.
Yeah.
Is way, obviously far more complex than a lot of the other movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's her character that really does it for me. Like what the other men are doing, it's just like, they're just like acting like dudes in a movie like this. But for mm-hmm. her, I just feel like in so many of these movies, like it's usually like one way or the other. Like the woman is like super, super hard-nosed and like nothing touches her, or everything does. And she's right. just like upset the entire time. And Teresa's very much like kind of in the middle where she reacts to situations in ways that like I relate to and understand. And so mm-hmm. I think it's the performance that really, really does it for me, I think.
And I think the scene where she is at the guy's house and he gets shot is really well done. Also, like, I feel like a lot of movies would have just had her run out of there.
Yeah.
But I do like that she is covering all of her bases. They show that because she's not a fucking idiot. I do love that, like, when they get the description of the woman, or first when they get to the crime scene, they're basically saying, like, they say that they found, like, a long red hair. And George Gazunder, whatever, the shitty cop, was like, you sure a broad could shoot a gun like this?
Yeah,
he's like, I don't think a woman could do this. And then when they get the description of the woman from the mechanic or the guy at the bar or whatever, the way that Jeff Fahey is tipped off that it could be Teresa Russell is they go, well, she has got a great pair of tits.
I know. And he's like,
that's a Jeff Fahey. And he's tits. Like, wait a second.
You know, that is, I LOL'd so hard. I was like, wait, has he? So
well, it's
funny.
Like they give you so many other descriptions. And if you look at the composite sketch, you're the like, yeah, that looks like Teresa like Russell. But then it they're like, she's got like great her. Tits. And he's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's only one woman in this town who's got great tits and I know exactly who she
yeah,
is.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. I was like, is everyone else's tits really busted in this fucking town?
Everyone in the Valley's tits are busted. So they're like, that's the only woman in Studio City who's got a great rack. But his reaction to finding out it's her and when she's trying to explain the situation, he's so fucking annoying.
He really is.
So annoying.
He's like, I'm a cop. You can't put me in this position.
It's like, she's a cop too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, nobody treats her like she's a cop. They're just like, oh, what is this bitch doing?
Yeah.
Where is she
and then,
doing
like, when she
here?
Retires, they're kind of like, finally.
They are. And then immediately Morgan, like, brings her into a bathroom and, like, starts, like, throwing her around. I'm a cop and you're not. And I'm just like, literally, I mean, I think that that's
I've been waiting 10 years to do this to you.
Yes.
Where, like, it's just, like, very plain. The movie just, like, really states plainly that, like, the only thing that is stopping her from, like, getting harassed all the time is being a cop. And she still yeah. gets harassed all the time. It just would be worse.
Yeah.
No, yeah, everyone's always like, don't you have a fucking corner to go stand on or something?
Don't you
yeah.
have, like, it's just like, what's this bitch doing here? What's this?
Yeah.
Like, is this the cunt convention in? Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, they're so horrible to her.
I mean, it all checks out. I don't doubt that that's.
And they're constantly talking about her credit card debt. Like, okay, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure
that, dude, I'm forgot
sure that
you're about
trying
that.
To buy a. Morgan brings it up constantly.
He does. Like,
you can't stop being a cop. You can't stop doing this because of all of your credit card debt. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, I'm sure that you're trying to, like, buy a boat or some shit. Like, I'm sure you've got got some debt too. Chill out.
That's all right. That's what they tell me for being a waiter. They're like, you'll never stop being a waiter because we know about your credit card debt. We know exactly what you owe the government. Yeah, that's a weird thing to go after your like coworker for.
You broke bitch. Like,
yeah, basically.
Bitch, I know you got that 500 credit score. Don't fuck with me. I know exactly what you got. That's an insane subplot.
It's everyone really, talking really shit crazy
to this woman about her credit score.
It's just like, okay, do you want to like, you want to like help her buy stock? Like, what are you going to do for her?
Yeah.
That's why Jeff A. is like trying to be her dad. He's like, listen, I know you need a co-signer. You're not going anywhere.
I know. It's like at this point,
you can't get
I'm
an
like,
apartment.
She would be better off if she just became a like an actual prostitute.
Yeah.
Because it's like she would be making money and like she would get to like at least control the people who were harassing her. But now she has to be like harassed under like the veil of like fucking helping.
Yeah, I'd be like, fuck this, dude. I'm just going to actually do this shit because I'm sick of this bullshit. We'll talk about in a second, like the bad reviews for this. But yeah, like there was a positive review from Roger Ebert. He gave it 3 stars and he was one of the only positive reviews the movie had. He compared the movie to Pickpocket, which I thought was interesting.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Pickpocket in so long.
It's great. It's amazing. He said the movie is good to look at and painfully intense at times. Not so much when the plot is squeezing in as when we're invited to identify with Russell when she's looking for trouble. You know the feeling. It's something you're not supposed to do and you could get in trouble if you're caught, but you want to and you're tired and nobody loves you. And there's this seductive stirring inside of you and temptation has thrown an arm over your shoulder and is signaling the bartender with one at the other hand. It's this impulse that makes the movie interesting and worth seeing. But he talked about how he wished the movie would have ignored a lot of the plot. He basically wanted it to be more, I think, like Pickpocket, where he was like, I would rather just watch this woman try to navigate this undercover work without the plot getting in the way. He was like, I think that's a more complex and interesting story, which I think is a fair point. But I think obviously like no studio is going to be like, yeah, you should do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that that's a really good assessment. You know, every once in a while, the horny man really came through.
He did.
Yeah, dude.
I just want to watch her hook. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean,
come on.
I also would like that.
But yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot of reviews on this movie. James Sanford of the Kalamazoo Gazette said, a laugh riot, unintentionally, of course.
Oh my God, what a loser. Get laid.
Who the fuck?
So many critics. I just like, they just sound like they have never had sex in their life when they're describing.
I write for the Kalamazoo Gazette. You're right.
It's just like, it's funny. No, it's funny to you because you do not understand eroticism. You really don't.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate.
Scott Weinberg of eFilmCritic.com said, instantly forgettable cop stuff.
Oh, fuck you.
Karen James of the New York Times said, amazingly pedestrian. From the opening sequence, impulse is so generic, you can practically sing along. Michael Willington of the LA Times said, it's obvious that Locke is straying heavily into Eastwood territory here. Obvious also that she's learned a lot from him. Impulse has his terse sang-froid and light and tight-lipped romanticism, his clean, inexorable pacing, and his country kid fascination with sleek urban rot. Watching Impulse, you almost wonder whether this seemingly angry pair could forget the tabloids and lawyers and call a truce. They might have a few more good movies together left in them.
I really don't understand this constant mentioning of him. And I really, like, it makes me wonder how much of it was his influence and how much of it was just, like, people's internalized misogyny. What does this have to do with him? Nothing.
Well, it seems like he just defined so much of her career at a certain point, and she couldn't get out from under it. It's fucking awful.
Yeah, it's a bummer because I still think that, like, I think it has a lot of the same issues that Blue Steel does in terms of, like, the cop stuff being kind of, like, ridiculous. Have y'all done Blue Steel?
It's not rotten.
It's not rotten.
Oh,
yeah.
Fuck, it's not rotten? That's crazy.
No, the only one of her movies that is rotten is The Weight of Water, which is not a very good movie.
It's terrible.
Yeah, but we are going to do Strange Days for our bonus episode in a couple months because it's barely.
I
barely
love
Strange Days.
It had to have been rotten at some point, right?
It was rotten. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of really interesting quotes from Sandra Locke about, she also has an autobiography she wrote that goes pretty in depth with her relationship with Clint Eastwood.
What's it called?
It is called The Good, the Bad, and the Very Ugly. But apparently when she was trying to do a book tour for it, she got stopped at pretty much every turn by Clint Eastwood's people. She felt that she was blacklisted from the industry because of her very public falling out with him. She died a year after a lot of the Me Too stories started to come out.
I saw that she like recently...
Yeah, she died in 2018. Sarah Weinman, a writer, said Sandra Locke, like Barbara Loden, who did Wanda, deserves to be known for her work, not the famous man she was disastrously involved with.
Exactly.
It's pretty bleak. It's sad. It's a very sad end to her life.
She made some other movies too, and I might try to track those down.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
She was in court with Clint Eastwood for 19 months. She developed breast cancer while in court with him. So the treatment sapped her will to fight.
Her movie Death in Small Doses is on Tubi.
That's a good title.
God bless Tubi. Yeah, and I guess she lost a lot of friends after that relationship. A lot of her friends had been the wives of these famous men that she had, you know, kind of associated herself with.
I kind of just want to beat him up. I mean, he's an old man. I can't beat up an old man, but I kind of do.
God, yeah. I guess, yeah, when they were together, Clint secretly fathered another woman's two children in the 80s. Fact that did not come to light for almost 20 years.
Like, what's this? Problem. That's what I know. What's his problem? Like, I also want to know what John Voight's problem was, because I've heard
that
he was shitty to Angelina Jolie's mom too.
Yeah.
And like part of the reason why she like got into acting was so that she could support her mom, because he wasn't doing it.
Really?
Yeah.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah, I guess in retrospect, Sandra Locke said, although I definitely still loved Clint in 1985, I didn't very much like him. Either he changed from white to black, or I had been living with somebody I didn't even know.
I think it comes from being a man and being very intimidated by like the talent and potential of the woman with you, and being afraid of what's going to happen if she became more relevant than you. And he made sure that that did not happen. Yeah, it's fuck him all day. But you know, Unforgiven, it's a good movie. I think especially like with that context, the film, I mean, even though it's a basic hot film plot, I think that there's some pain in there and experience in there that she was trying to express in terms of the way that the men in her life talked to her, which seems like not well, not good.
Who's your MVP for Impulse?
Well, it's either the director or the star, right?
Yeah, I think Teresa Russell's really good in this.
But I kind of want to say Sandra Locke, because it sounds like she just like shit on and had to work so hard to like be able to make just so little.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that she was in court with this guy for fucking almost 2 years and then got breast cancer and then, you know, directed this.
Yeah.
So fuck it. Let's say it's Sandra Locke again. It's a double Sandra Locke MVP.
Double whammy. First time, maybe?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know. Well, you gave MVP to Bruce Willis twice last week for Last Boy Scout and Die Hard. So. All right. Impulse.
Definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, definitely check it out and check out more of Sandra Locke's her work and in front of and behind the camera. I'm very curious about Rat Boy now. Morbidly curious.
If you can make it through Rat Boy, God bless you. Now that I know what was going on with her, and because the movie came out in 1986, now that I understand what was going on with her in 1985, like I understand why that shit is so crazy.
Failed window dresser exploits a bean with rat-like features in an effort to make money.
A bean?
A bean.
This guy's a bean.
Like, she just like tries, she like puts him on MTV. It's like nuts.
Oh, I hate the way this guy looks so much.
Oh, it's really upsetting. And also like Rat Boy like gets like Sandra Locke puts him on TV and Rat Boy is also like clearly in love with her. And so it's just
Clint Eastwood scene is what the fuck. What the fuck are you doing? All right, I'll give you the money.
Rat Boy based on Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And next week, if you want to follow along with us, we're going to watch two films that helped start Asian hate. Ridley Scott's Black Rain, which is on Amazon for free to stream. And Michael Cimino's Year of the Dragon, which I think you have to buy to watch. I know that Max watched it, texted me some gems of quotes from that movie.
I bought it as soon as it ended. I had to buy it. But right now, we gotta thank Jordan for coming back. Thank you for talking to us about Sandra Locke. and introducing us to Impulse. Where can people find you, Jordan?
You know, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Judy Squirrels. I mean, I don't know why you would want to, but like if you do, like the And I have a podcast, Bad Romance. Like we are on like a bit of a hiatus because I had to get a new host, but we're recording new episodes and we should be back soon. Hopefully I can post some before I go to Australia because I'm going to Australia next week.
Right. Yeah.
For how long? Yeah. No. 10 days. So, and it's cold there. So I'm bringing my sweater. Yeah.
That's going to be fun though. Fucking Australia.
It's going to be fun. Like I've heard that the food is banging. And hopefully I can see some cool animals.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah.
Maybe you'll see Rat Boy out in the wild. Oh my God.
That's where Rat Boy comes
they
from.
Won't let me leave. please listen to Bad Romance Pod if you haven't already. I know Jordan's been on a few times now, so hopefully you've checked it out. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And Spotify and all the
and
things.
Subscribe to our fucking Patreon.
Subscribe to us on Patreon. You can subscribe to any of three tiers. Spread the word. Do all those things. And join us next week for the movies that started Asian Hate.
No. I can do that. I'm Korean.
Yeah, I know. Thanks for listening.